the NFL podcast. Loves motivational speech cliches.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room that's filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Woo! Out of Mondays. Oh, thank God.
Your week is looking up.
Got out of hump day, and let's not sleep on hump day. The worst. It's like half a glass half empty, half full. Oh, my God.
It is nice to see your Monday bit mushrooming.
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow.
TGIF.
I like to call Thursday Friday Junior.
I like that. The Gentleman's Friday, I call it.
The Gentleman's Friday.
Welcome to the podcast, Greg. How are you?
Yeah, you've really got the office worker talk covered.
Speaking of the office, my goodness. A couple things. Thanks, Ben. A couple of things. I had a small thing that will build up to a very big thing. I had a tremendous Asian chicken salad today. Tremendous. And one of the best Huddle, and that's our local commissary, meals I've ever had. And it was suggested to me by a woman that I've known for several years now, a real classy dame, one of the greats, a two-time champion on the softball field. And also has another name. She's the paramour. And some big news broke. What was it, Tuesday? Tuesday, Wes?
I already forget the date.
Whoa.
It doesn't bode well.
It Tuesday. Was Tuesday because Wes pretended to be doing house-related stuff, I believe.
Also. I actually was doing house-related stuff.
But you had a covert plan operating as a plan B.
I did have a covert
plan. Chris Wessling dropped to one knee, presumably.
I did, in fact.
And made plans to make an honest woman of the paramour.
I popped the question.
Popping the question. Bring that back, too. I like that. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ow!
We're very excited.
How exciting.
Tremendous.
A little overdue, but it's great.
Yeah, I had this whole cancer thing that got in the way for a while.
It did get in the way.
Yeah.
If you delayed
plans.
How about this? If you did not catch the big C in a big spot, when would this have happened?
Who knows?
Well, she asked me last night.
I asked Wes, not you, Greg.
She asked me last night, if not for the big C, would this have happened?
Oh, that's
And I said, I'm very confident, 100% confident it would have happened, but I feel like we grew stronger together as a result.
That's so true, because Lakeisha was a total rock for you.
Absolutely.
Like, I've never seen anything like it in terms of devotion, like up close, the way she was devoted to you during your fight and leading up to the hospital stay and after it. That was, what else do you need?
We were fortunate that we had hit our strongest point about a couple of months before the diagnosis. So we were sailing at the time. Mm. And I think that helped a lot.
I think, it's been a huge summer for you guys. I expected this to happen, and it's so great to see two of the best people ever, becoming a union forever. But I expected that. I did not know you were going to get a badass house to move into at the exact same time.
So yeah, that's
like, nicely done.
It's a lot.
Nicely
it's
done.
A lot.
That helped with the timing of it, and it feels like a lot of things that I didn't believe would happen for a long time are now all of a sudden happening, in a great way, much sooner than I would have expected.
And connect the dots, Wes now tucking in his shirt.
A lot's happening. A lot is changing for Wes.
Well, if you want to connect the dots, is that we haven't done laundry since before we left for Tybee. So, I've got these nice clothes that I have to wear because my normal, casual
way. Right. And by the way, Vegas is already cooking up the odds for who will be the best man of Wes's wedding. Where they have David Ely right now, Mark?
I think Ely was sitting at about 250-1.
Long shot.
Wow.
I mean, you got it. You can't – not everyone can be a favorite.
I like Ely a lot.
He's a long shot.
Oh, that would be quite a Machiavellian work move to make Ely your best man. I would appreciate that.
The question also is –
strategy.
I feel like Nick Wessling's already just doing the job, assuming he is. Like he's just
that feels like a Nick move to assume that he would be.
Yeah, that's 4-1, they're saying. Ely, by the way, the greatest odds he's ever had to be a best man. That's
where
he's open. Wow. That's triple source
drive
that?
By. Seems drive by. Like you did.
Harsh.
Love you. All right, so great, great, great news.
I like how you upgraded from like you to love you. You corrected yourself. I like you. Sounds bad.
So great news around the Wesseling compound, and maybe we'll touch on this more a little bit later. But we got a lot to get to today, including a prominent Patriot suspension, and this one unlikely to be met with the resistance of the last major offensive player for the Patriots who was suspended for 4 games. We'll get into that. Also, although I don't know. Maybe it will turn into another huge to-do. Every suspension strikes fear in my heart now. Get court dates and injunctions.
This feels a little more a little neater than the.
I did a 3-hour binge. I'm almost through the Cowboys All or Nothing season now, and it gave me like PTSD watching the Elliott saga unfold. Anyway, news from the White House.
Brave of you to get through that, Dan.
I made it. Also, on the subject of Wes's impending nuptials with the paramour, some real talk about marriage, NFL marriages, that is. So we'll get to that. So let's get right to it. Let's do some news.
I've got something to say. Elizabeth, I love you.
Goodness, he's getting that punch. He's building up his courage. I think maybe he's going to ask her. What's that? Look at that. Hot rod. Take a look. Wow. Look at that ring. He's going to ask her, folks.
Elizabeth.
This is how it went down, by the way.
Yeah, this is like a play-by-play review.
We don't have an answer. We don't have an answer.
He did it.
Wait, we don't have an answer.
Elizabeth?
Lakeisha?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We got us a win in a win game.
My God.
Didn't invite us over to this announcing background. We could have done a live podcast watching you.
Although, back when wrestling was real.
Although, yes. Although Mean Gene Okerlund was also at your big move, he was also nude, which was very strange.
Well,
Mean Gene, not wearing any clothes.
You also short-sighted Mean Gene in the odds for best man.
He's in there. I haven't announced the odds yet, but he's in there. He's in there. Is he ahead of the brothers or behind the brothers?
Some of them.
Some of a better shot than others for different reasons. Okay, let's start. Let's start on the throne of sleaze. Wait. Oh.
Uh-oh.
Tom Brady. He's not going to have his favorite. Oh.
Uh-oh.
People of New England.
Oh, no.
We come in peace.
Oh, that's good.
They seem friendly.
I say we trust them.
How great for our planet.
Is that the moment you knew Lakeisha was the girl you wanted to spend the rest of your life with when you heard that?
Yeah, that was her debut on the podcast.
That's her glowing optimism about a life force beyond ours.
I would say that is very much in character for her.
I think with Dan and I recording that with Lakeisha, that we kind of brought her into the podcast world.
Family?
And in a way, probably Dan and I are being sort of underrated in terms of who gets credit for this relationship. Right. You know, that moment right there probably spun this axis a bit.
Your arrow is pointing up on the best man odds.
All right.
How about a co-best man scenario?
Mm. I mean, just for that?
for that taping alone, that occurred in like April 2016.
I mean, Greg did in fact hire both of us, but you guys planned to drop.
That's business.
She's definitely a better actress than Miss Elizabeth. That's for sure.
Oh,
delivered that.
By the way,
line.
Miss Elizabeth not with us anymore,
no
Greg. So maybe, you know, take it a little easier.
How would I have known that?
Well, it's history. Sports history.
She was world in wrestling, and she's over the age of 50.
Julian Edelman, the Tom Brady paramour, is facing a 4-game suspension, violating the NFL's performance enhancing substances policy. Kim Jones reported. ESPN First had it. If the suspension holds, has it been formally appealed yet as of taping?
That's why whenever it comes out in the news like this, it means it's under appeal. You're not supposed to find out till it's official, but it's under appeal.
So under appeal. Edelman, if it holds, will miss the Patriots' first 4 games of the season, Texans, Jags, Lions, and Dolphins. So there's some big games there. Edelman's 32. Of course, he missed all of last season after suffering a torn ACL in the preseason. Greg, we'll start with you, Patriots fan. You and all Pats fans were counting on Edelman to fill the void in an offseason in which there were some key defections. And now they will be without him for a quarter of the season. Is this a big deal?
It is for Edelman.
Not the Patriots.
No, because I don't know what you're getting in Edelman. I have not assumed he's going to be their number one receiver. I have not assumed he's going to be the Julian Edelman of old. He's 32 years old with a history of foot problems coming off a torn ACL, always a smaller guy who was counting on quickness to beat defenders. Maybe he was going to come back in and just be like his old self, but I wasn't assuming that. And in the way the Patriots – kind of our run, the only constant is change. The offense is always changing. They have Gronk, Chris Hogan, Jordan Matthews, James White, Sony Michel, a lot of guys who are going to catch the ball for them. They're not all wide receivers, but they're deep at wide receivers, so I don't think it's a killer. I'm more just wondering, I don't care about the first 4 weeks. You have that luxury when you're a Patriots fan on some level. I wonder what Julian Edelman are they getting this season, period, because they could really use him to be the guy that he used to be, and we won't know until week five.
I think to your point, I mean, it's a team that has historically proven that they can shape-shift from week to week. They could have spent 2 weeks of those 4 weeks, even if he were on the roster, deciding not to maximize him and maximize other players. I mean, they can be a new offense weekly with the way they do things. I do think that it's probably ultimately a sneaky plan by Kenny Britt to try to have some sort of impact on an NFL roster come September.
He tainted
I'm just saying, I wouldn't put anything past Kenny Britt at this point, and here he is in New England causing a stir.
He has had access to substances in the past.
No doubt.
You do bring up the point, and Wes, I'll tee you up on this. Chris Hogan, you mentioned, Jordan Matthews. Other wide receivers in their building, Cordarrelle Patterson, Malcolm Mitchell, Kenny Britt, Philip Dorsett, Braxton Berrios, Cody Hollister. Do they have enough guys?
Well, they had the number one offense in the NFL without Julian Edelman last year and just put 625 yards on one of the best defenses in football in the Super Bowl without Julian Edelman. I think they'll be all right.
No Amendola either, by the way. No, I know the instinct in this room is to always say
no, no Brandon Cooks.
Their passing game might struggle, but I don't think it will because Edelman's there for the first month or not. They tend to start slowly in general. Gronk is the number one receiver on the team.
Right, Gronk's healthy.
And they won a Super Bowl without him, it should be remembered. But he's the number one receiver on the team. I've been wondering, what is this offense going to look like? I don't think Bill Belichick knows. That's why they often do get out of the gates a little slowly. They spend that first month or more. Last year, it felt like most of the season.
And their version of slowly is not other teams' versions of slowly.
No, it's 2-2 sometimes.
Also, Jordan Matthews might be 6'2 or 6'3 and 220 pounds, but he's almost strictly a slot receiver.
Yep.
So we'll see how that plays out if Edelman is indeed not going to be with the team, but let's move on. Big White House news. The Philadelphia Eagles had their visit to the White House canceled less than 24 hours before it was scheduled. This coming after the White House made an announcement that the Eagles – let me read this statement, actually, from President Donald Trump. The Philadelphia Eagles are unable to come to the White House with their full team to be celebrated tomorrow. They disagree with their president because he insists that they proudly stand for the national anthem, hand on heart, in honor of the great men and women of our military and the people of our country. And owner Jeffrey Lurie, Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie, did not want to put his players in a tough spot. That's how this all started. Did not say everyone go to the White House. Their decision, the Eagles' decision, was to send a smaller delegation, and that ended up being a very small delegation. And then when the White House got wind of that, they tried to change the situation and say, no, if you're not going to send a lot of people, don't send anybody. And it just turns into another ugly situation involving the NFL and the President of the United States.
And we talked about when they changed the anthem policy that their expressed goal in press conferences, the owners, that is, was to kind of minimize this story. And I think the last week has shown how short-sighted that was. You know, because it obviously it didn't help ease any tensions with the White House, and it's just an awkward situation because we haven't really heard much from the NFL side. We saw a very sort of indirect statement from the Eagles in response that really didn't address it, and I'm wondering, like, why aren't we, it's just strange to not hear anything from the NFL, because I look at what the Eagles have done over the last few days, and you guys can talk about it too, Malcolm Jenkins and everything that's happened, and part of me is proud to be part of that the Eagles are doing this, proud of what the players are doing, and yet it's this strange silence in terms of the between the league and the White House in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like one of my earliest memories of football was when the Redskins won the Super Bowl in 1987 and went and met with Ronald Reagan, that clip of Doug Williams throwing the pass to Reagan. And you have to know that big chunks of players on that team did not disagree or did not agree with the president and his stances and his viewpoint of the world. But over and over, the White House and the NFL community found a way to make this event happen year after year. And the idea, what I find that I feel like the Eagles players are almost in desperation trying to make it clear to big chunks of the country, none of us kneeled during the anthem scenario last year. We have a player in Chris Long who gave his entire paycheck for educational funding. We've got other players that have done that. I just spent a week overseas with players and a coach who gave their time and earned not a cent to go spend time with the military. There are examples on every single team of players who give up their Tuesday, their off day all season long simply for charity work. And it's a higher percentage than the average office and the average office filled with working men and women. And instead, they are treated this way. And I could see why the frustration is reaching peak level.
It appears as if this new national anthem policy, which has really inflamed all of this, has also potentially ended up emboldening the president. And it's caused what he did in lieu of holding this ceremony involving the Eagles was to hold what was deemed a patriotic party of some kind that included the national anthem and God Bless America. So it's turned into that the policy, which was meant to tamp things down, has really made this a much bigger situation, and it continues with this White House visit. By the way, I missed this by 1 year. Sandwich prop. I said the winner of Super Bowl 51 would not go to the White House.
52.
That is clearly the largest bullet point to this story.
To me, yeah. It is.
By the way, an update. I bought you and Wes a sandwich last week.
You did indeed.
You did.
And I would have bought Greg one, but you had already eaten. And so I bought Greg a cup of coffee that he managed to spill all over the floor of the sandwich shop that we were at. And I believe, did they give you a complimentary cup in return? Nice store. Nice place.
Did they?
I'm getting tweets all the time. Oh, Sessler doesn't. No, I'm not going to. I'm going to pay for it out of my own pocket, because, you know, it would be, I think to go get it expense would feel a little cheap.
Bad news around the Giants. The Giants players were informed Tuesday by Coach Pat Shurmur that GM Dave Gettleman diagnosed with lymphoma, which is a type of cancer that begins in infection-fighting cells of the immune system. Gettleman, 67 years old, said earlier this week that his, quote, prognosis is positive. But this comes after the Giants hired Gettleman in December. He was the GM of the Panthers for 4 years prior to that. And Gettleman plans to work through treatments. And assistant GM Kevin Abrams and Shurmur will obviously help him during this process. Wes, cancer, it pops up everywhere.
Yeah, I have a feeling it won't affect his job for a while. But once he starts going through the treatments, I'll tip my cap to him if he can keep doing 12, 15-hour days and not have to lean on other people to carry out some of his responsibilities, because it does get to be a very arduous process to go through.
Yeah, there's not – and you wouldn't expect it. It's, I think everyone wants to respect his privacy. There's such a range of how the process of trying to get better is going to be, and there's not a lot of information, but he's obviously a guy that we've enjoyed –
we love Gettleman.
One of the characters in the NFL, and there was a great, great moment in his life to get this job. I mean, he was almost a lifer with the Giants. It's kind of a dream job, especially the way that it ended in Carolina for him to land on this job. So you feel for him.
I thought you were referring to at the combine when Mark Sessler approached Dave Gettleman. Both men had some drinks at that point and went up to him, shook his hand, and said, "You're one of the best men in the league."
I think I said you're one of the best general managers in the NFL. And, you know,
I thought that was the top moment of Mark's life.
He couldn't have been nicer. And I basically just said my dad was a Giants fan, you know, and he's like, "Oh, yeah." Like he got right into it. And it's just like everything that we kind of thought about Gettleman from afar, in person, he was that guy.
In other news, Carson Wentz, the Eagles quarterback, who lost the end of his second season after a torn ACL in December. He continues to be on the right track for week one. Doug Peterson, the Eagles coach, said Wednesday that Wentz has been cleared for 7-on-7 work at OTAs. This is a controlled environment, so nothing too heavy duty, but it is yet another sign that the quarterback can be ready for week one against the Atlanta Falcons, and it will be Nick Foles serving as the backup as that season began, but certainly did not finish.
Yeah, it's just a signpost that says, here we are, he's passed this test, he's on pace for week one, and we'll find out more in training camp.
There was some video of him sort of dodging these big medicine ball, balloon ball type things. I don't know what the actual substance of the ball was, but he looked great, going left and right, and looked spry.
They were bombs, actually.
Because like a medicine ball is a certain size. It looked, from what I saw, like an odd version of a medicine ball, but I probably should have stopped talking about 8 seconds ago. So.
Moving on, the Baltimore Ravens, again, facing discipline for violating off-season workout rules under the CBA. The Ravens will forfeit their final two organized team activities this week as a result of an undisclosed infraction. Greg, take us behind the scenes. What was this infraction?
Who knows?
Okay. Vice President.
We do know.
I don't know.
Oh, Wes, what was the infraction?
I believe Wes wrote the article here.
I did indeed. John Harbaugh's statement said that the Ravens were singled out for pass coverage contact.
There could be no less consequential, you know, story every year than a team losing OTAs.
Well, they're also losing hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So yeah, to Steve Bisciotti that matters, not to me. It's like many of the teams, including the Lions.
Why are you so selfish, Greg?
I'm saying the Lions, for instance, they don't hold, and this is pretty.
They don't hold practices.
They don't hold nearly as many. Ever. They actually haven't.
They turned around this year.
New deal now.
They skipped a couple OTAs.
They'll show up by September.
It's not a new era, though. I would think this would be on your radar. They went out of their way to not hold two of their OTAs because they don't believe in practicing three straight days.
But they did practice this week, right, as opposed to last week? Weren't they one of the four teams, first four teams?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's progress. So I'm saying maybe they cut some practices, so some old habits. You know, we'll see if that comes back to bite them.
I know this was, like, bubbled up on Twitter yesterday, too, but when you're the Ravens and you just sort of do this over and over and over – Why is the punishment remaining the same over and over?
It's actually less this time.
The Seahawks,
less.
The fines were less.
It happened for the Seahawks too. They did lose a draft pick and more money when they did it. I think because it's basically viewed as it's not really that big of an infraction. It's just like some contact in the secondary.
You got to build that mouser now.
This is no coincidence that the Ravens keep getting caught. John Harbaugh hates this rule, has called it un-American.
I like John Harbaugh.
He hates this part of the CBA and has basically said, how do we get young players to develop if we can't practice? It's un-American not to help them further their craft. That's how he phrased it.
Well, in the 80s and 90s, when you'd hear a coach say, like, we had a great week of practice, mm-hmm. it meant that they hit the crap out of each other every single
yes.
day. And now it means nothing.
John Harbaugh, or some people call him the less crazy Jim Harbaugh.
Friend of the show.
He was one of the nicest guys when we interviewed him.
Although I don't know if he's – I'm not ready to say he's the less crazy one.
He's got some heat to him. We've heard. But is he in Jim's class in terms of being eccentric?
No.
Probably.
But I think he's got some things. He's not a guy you would want to cross.
No.
I think you know, maybe he just does it not in front of the camera.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. We're hearing the same stories. A little behind-the-scenes stuff going on here.
Huh.
A little insider-on-insider talk. I like it. Ryan Shazier held his first press conference Wednesday morning since he suffered that terrifying spinal injury in Week 13 last year. He underwent spinal stabilization surgery in December. We saw him come out with a, you know, very noticeable limp, very stiff at the draft when he announced a Steelers pick. But despite that, and despite the fact that he's already been moved to the reserve physically unable to perform list, which ends his 2018 season, Ryan Shazier is not giving up on the idea that he could return to football. Here's what he said during his presser.
Yeah, my dream is to come back and play football again. You know, I've been working my tail off every single day. So I have that in my back of my mind every single time I go to rehab. And, you know, I just try to stay positive every single day. So I'm just trying to do everything I can to get back.
I know this is a guy that his whole life was built upon playing football, playing professional football. But I have to say, it's like I admire him, but also I can't even imagine how scary it would be, the idea of going back on a football field after what happened. So best of luck to him.
Well, this tells me that his doctors have told him it's possible, or have not said, hey, it's not possible for you to get back out there. And there's no way for this to happen again unless you can visualize it yourself. So I love that he still has it in his mind to go back out.
Made a lot of progress. I mean, that's what strikes me is in these cases, usually the first few months are so, so crucial. And he's made a lot of progress in those few months. I mean, you can see it when he's walking up to the press conference.
And we don't know him, but a lot of people around him who know him personally and very well say we don't doubt him. So, I mean, I think, Wes, you're exactly right. If he knew it was impossible, he wouldn't say these things.
So many humans go through life growing up and not doing something they're passionate about for the rest of their lives. And this is a man who's passionate about something. I hope it's not taking it away from him.
Best of luck to Ryan Shazier. Moving on, Zach Miller, who also suffered a horrific injury on the field last season. This was a dislocated knee, shredded all ligaments. He's underwent 9 surgeries leading into January just to try to save the leg. Forget about repair the leg, to save the leg. That's how serious the Miller injury was. He was placed on the reserve PUP list on Tuesday, which effectively ends the season. Which he was never going to play anyway. It came a day after the Bears signed him to a 1-year, $458,000 contract. They did that as an act of good faith, and that's the type of stuff that I would think sits well with other players because that's a classy move by an organization.
I think growing up, especially in this country, you learn too much how much the almighty dollar is worth and how much it factors into decisions. In sports, you hear it all the time. It's a business decision. And we've become numb to it. So when you see somebody make a move where it puts humans above the almighty dollar, it's sort of jolting, and I love it, because we don't have to, like, remove the human factor from all equations and involve money.
Right. He's had 9 surgeries since this injury. Both he and Shazier, their lives were irrevocably changed, in a moment. And Miller's not a guy – he had a long NFL career, but he's not a guy that, is making like $10 million a year and everything. And this gesture – yeah, you said it. You always hear there's no loyalty in sports. But this is a loyal move by the Bears.
This is pure loyalty.
And I think people in any job you have, whether it's in football or you work in a cubicle in the middle of Iowa – when someone you work with is going through a tough time, it's not you. You monitor how your company treats that person. And Dan is right that in the locker room, the players see how the Bears treat someone who's been going through a lot.
In Cleveland Browns news, Duke Johnson signs a 3-year, $15.6 million extension through 2021. This is a bit surprising. Maybe it's surprising to Duke Johnson, who did tweet his displeasure after the Browns took Nick Chubb in the draft. But it turns out the Browns still have, obviously, big plans for Johnson, who had a career-high 74 catches in 2017. You like it, Mark?
I like Duke Johnson a lot. I mean, I think he was on a terrible team, a guy that was a quality player last year, and he was the year before. And if he were on a different team that was on national television 5 times a year, the whole country, I think, would know who Duke Johnson is for what he can do well. And I kind of think – he may be upset about Nick Chubb, but I keep looking at Carlos Hyde and feel like I'm not even sure Carlos Hyde is on this team a year from now necessarily, with the way, depending on who they're putting. You drafted someone and you just re-signed someone. Carlos Hyde feels like the guy that's sort of sitting in the middle of this wondering what his role is.
Yeah, he gone.
Most weeks last year when I was going to watch Game Pass, Duke Johnson was the only reason I stayed awake during Browns games.
Right.
He had an exceptional season, mm-hmm. running after the catch, breaking tackles, making something out of nothing, one of the best receiving backs in the league.
You need two backs. And he's, I think, been impressive since day one, and his role's moved up and up just because the coaching staff has learned how to use him better. And the money on this deal is very reasonable. It's good for both sides. I mean, the third down backs, they do not get paid a lot, but it's also smart for the Browns to lock it in, because that's a great 1-2 punch if Chubb is anywhere close to what they expect.
Finally in the news, Terrell Owens gained an induction was voted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year, but he will not be in attendance. He had declined his invitation to attend the August 4th ceremony, enshrinement ceremony in Canton. He made that announcement Thursday with an official statement. While I am incredibly appreciative of this opportunity, I have made the decision to publicly decline my invitation to attend the induction ceremony in Canton. I have already shared this information with the Hall. After visiting Canton earlier this year, I came to the realization that I wish to celebrate what will be one of the most memorable days of my life elsewhere. At a later date, I will announce where and when I will celebrate my induction. Unprecedented, a statement released by the Hall of Fame later, that someone has made the choice not to attend their own induction ceremony. And it's very strange. And you wonder what the story is behind it, because it wasn't like they held T.O. out for 15 years and they hung him out to dry. I understand maybe he should have been a first ballot guy, but he got in on the third ballot. What gives here?
Something happened in Canton. By the way, he said the statement. He said, after visiting Canton, I have determined that I don't want to do this. So something about the Hall of Fame made him uncomfortable.
Right. That line was very interesting. And then Adam Schein tweeted out that he was with T.O. in the studio and asked him what former teammates are going to come watch you be inducted. And he didn't name any teammates. He named three former assistant coaches. And so
yeah.
I wonder if that's
what it's about.
I don't know. It feels like there's just maybe a lot of bad feelings here. And I feel bad for T.O. if that's the end result here.
He spoke at Cam Newton's kickball event too, just saying he felt disrespected by having to wait. And I don't know if that's the reason why, but it's a bummer. It's a bummer, you know, for the weekend, but it's more of a bummer for T.O. because you can't tell another grown man like how to live your life or how to live his life. But you would think that it would be an amazing, almost every, you would think it would be maybe the highlight of his entire football career if he just let it happen. He would be showered in love. He would realize how everyone does really appreciate him. He would see all these other greats, and he loves the game of football. He would see how the greatest players of all time do respect him, and you would think it would be sort of a magical. They respect his game, and that's what they'll be talking about. I don't think people are going to be jerks about it on Hall of Fame weekend, and I think they recognize he's one of the best players of all time.
Right, but we've been to a couple Hall of Fame weekends, and they really are like this unadulterated, pure football experience, and I think it's an opportunity to maybe heal some of this stuff. And you're choosing not to take that opportunity.
Sad.
Marcellus Wallace once said that pride is messing with you. F pride. I wonder if he's going to regret this in 10 years. We'll never.
Or if he ultimately, I wonder if he'll ever change his mind.
Right, if enough people try to change his mind.
I mean, it's reasonable to be unsure about Halls of Fame in general. Like, if Terrell Owens doesn't have that much. People who are enshrined deserve it. They put all the effort in, and they deserve it to be honored, but there's a little bit of deification and lionizing that's a little too close to religion for me. Like, I love the history of the game, but I'm not all that into Halls of Fame.
It's ironic because T.O. is like, you know, basically been criticized for, you know, self-deification and self-love and glory, and he's passing up basically the ultimate, you know, event for getting that, like, love and deification.
And it's not the draft. It's not like when guys don't go to the draft and they like to be around their family and their old coaches and have a big party. Like, how are you going to have a party when the event itself is the – I don't know.
Right.
Strange.
Is no one else uncomfortable with the fact that
– Weird.
That, like, if 35 of these 50 people, writers, say you're in, that's great, you're in. If 34 say it, then you're out. Like, I have a hard time with it.
The process is strange. I don't think that's his issue. Maybe it is. I don't know. But I think the experience of it could, you know, make that almost irrelevant.
You know? I agree with you. Having been there, I agree with you. It's that kind of weekend. But
that's what's happening in the news. All right. At the top of the show, we spoke of the grand news of the week that Wes and the paramour, Lakeisha Jackson, are engaged to be wed. So without further ado, we have to welcome the bride into the Around the NFL podcast studios. Ladies and gentlemen, Lakeisha Jackson putting the headset on.
Wow, she's wearing a wedding dress for the podcast. It's great.
Keish, welcome to the Around
Hello.
The NFL.
Thanks for having me.
How great for our planet.
That was one of my favorite comments that someone posted about your Twitter announcement. And I started dying laughing.
Well, with you in the room, congratulations to both of you. You know, we're so excited. We can't wait for the wedding. The wedding's going to be a banger. Where is the wedding going to be? What's going on? When's the wedding?
When will it be?
Where and when?
Tybee Island, man.
It's going to Tybee.
Oh, yeah.
Going to Tybee.
Oh, that's
now great. The exact date, though, we don't know yet.
Like maybe week 7, week 8, right in the middle of the regular season.
Ely wouldn't allow that.
Right when the Browns and Jets are squaring off.
No.
Wait, Ely could be the best man. You have not ruled that out either.
250-1 odds, according to Mark.
It's a long shot.
According to Vegas.
Best shot he's got.
According to Keisha's face, I think it's longer than that.
Oh, whoa.
I plead the fifth.
Now, I don't know if, Wes, you brought it up, but I did float the possibility that this would be something that could be done live on the podcast.
He told me that.
Yeah.
And I agree, that could have been great, yes. But it's such a personal moment. I can see why, like, it just...
Yes.
Yeah. But what? As a host, oh, yeah, that would have been
well,
great.
What about the wedding live on the podcast to make up for the fact that this didn't happen that way?
Well, last
as long as I don't have to deal with anything, I don't care.
When we Keisha's like hands off.
When we did go back to Tybee a couple weeks ago, you woke up at like 3 or 4 in the morning after a night out partying to watch the royal wedding. So
that was one of the more amazing things I've ever seen. Keisha, who had a long day and
feeling
great, left at 1:30 a.m. so she could wake up at 4 to watch the royal wedding.
A lot of people doubted you that you wouldn't be able to pull that off.
I had
but
to prove
you did
them wrong. I went to sleep for like an hour, maybe and half.
And I saw that as yet another little nudge to Wes. He's like, I'm getting up for the royal wedding in the middle of the night.
Sure.
Let's fly. Yes or no?
Oh, yeah.
That was a nudge to me?
Not really, but, you know, I'm into that. It just was a big moment.
Yeah. How about this?
I don't work well with nudges.
How about this?
He's my nudger. I don't have to do much of that.
He being Dan.
Dan,
yes.
The agent.
Just some nudging.
Every time, like, if I'm feeling like about a nudge, you'd always bring it up in the podcast. I'm like, yes. All right.
I'm an agent of
my
nudge.
Agent. Putting a little fire under there.
Very excited. This is great. You know what? I do have in my life experience, and it's not a great thing, but it's a true thing that the people, especially guys, you know, relate to having guy friends through the years, family members, you really want your best friends, your close like cousins, brothers, to find a girl that is cool. And what I've learned in my life is that it doesn't always work out that way.
No.
Where the guys that you care so much about end up with a girl that you like and would love to spend time with, and they want to spend time with you. So this is one of the special ones where it clicks, and why we're so happy and excited. Why I'm so happy and excited, because you're the real deal, Keish. And you're a great person and a good friend to all of us. And it's like Legos, baby.
That goes the same way for girls, too. Like, we want
to
have fun hanging out with the husbands and stuff. So you always want to like them.
You guys have to stay fun, though. I'm not going to put up with you guys suddenly, we're getting involved in a lot of our own things. Hey, see you later. It's like, no, you better stay available and highly fun. Thank you.
Much to my relief, Keisha has made it a point of emphasis over the past few weeks, past couple months. When we do get married and have kids, that we're not going to be slaves to the kids. We're still going to have fun as adults.
You say that now.
I remember when Simone and I had that conversation.
I've had conversations with Keisha. She's got a lot of grand plans doesn't know what she's thought.
Yeah. Hey, half the battle is having that outlook, though.
By the way, every couple before having kids has had that conversation. Just throwing that out there.
You guys are adorable.
We
have to stay the same. Like,
yeah, but
you
guys still manage to have fun.
See?
There are a lot of couples that don't.
It's hard work.
It's
hard work to have fun.
It is. It is pretty amazing, though, to get to this point, because I think early on in your relationship, I think we all thought that this day was going to happen, that pretty early
felt
on,
right.
Like maybe even before Wes seemed to fully wrap his mind around it, that it seemed like this was coming. It was just a matter of time.
He would tell me, once we started dating, like stories that you guys would say whenever we weren't even dating, when we were just friends, like the night that he ended up crashing on my couch because we had drank too much after the softball game, and you being like, oh, this is huge.
It was a Jim and Pam moment.
It seemed destined at a certain point. I do remember that. And then because there were some, there's some, pre-LaKeisha talent that was just, not up to snuff. And then when Keish rolled in and you guys had the chemistry during the softball season and everything, it was like, this makes sense. Let's go. Let's fly.
And it's like, if it doesn't make sense, it blows up the newsroom. So thankfully, it worked out. I will say this. The first time I hung out with Wes, this was like a week after you had moved, and we had been chatting on, you know, our IM client for months, and I was like, I really like this guy. And I was like, I want to give him, like, a drinking buddy, a friend when you showed up, and others did too. But we went one of the earliest nights out. We went to this place called Irish Times, and this is like, I don't even think Lakeisha, what you haven't even met Lakeisha at this point. This is years before that. And the Wes got talking to this girl up at the bar at around like 10:30 p.m. and around 10:38 they were in an argument, and I thought, this boy's got a long way to go.
I have not heard,
because you were not
before.
Into it when you moved to LA, and it's incredible to see the arc from where you started, Wes, as a potential person who would date anyone, to here. Nice arc.
Sometimes people say it like in a figurative sense. I kind of think it in a literal sense that Lakeisha might have saved Wes's life. I'm being totally serious about that.
I'll take it.
As in, I would have died of cancer because I wouldn't have gone to the hospital or the doctor?
I'm saying that fight without Lakeisha would have been maybe an unfair fight, potentially, what you were up against.
Especially
perfect timing.
I don't deny that at all. I think loneliness is tough. And then you add cancer on top of that. That would have been, I'm already much more psychologically and mentally fragile because of cancer in some ways. Like, in some ways you're stronger, but in some ways it messes with your mind. And that's really the part where you need somebody by your side.
All right. So this is great. This is a happy week.
Make me cry.
This is a happy day. You want to sit in for the rest of the show, Keish? Because we're going to do in honor of the impending nuptials. And by the way, do you have a hashtag? Because right, Mark, we just missed this. Greg, you were also, you got married a little before.
Yeah, 2007.
2007, you were when, Mark?
2000, we were not doing hashtags for our wedding.
Yeah, you were at 2009. I was 2012.
You don't have to do it.
A lot of people do the hashtags now.
Oh, trust me.
And Keish is doing a hashtag. Wes doesn't have an option in this. You know, choice.
He has one hashtag, and I have one, because the story behind it, whenever we first started dating, my sister and my nephew were in town, and my sister has a way of just knowing if people are just good people or just liking them. Mm-hmm. So whenever he came over and met her, that was our first night dating, and right away she loved him and said, hashtag Team Wesley. So from day one of us dating, it was hashtag Team Wesley.
I have tried to put my foot down on this issue with the hashtags.
Already it's come up.
Oh, it's come up so many times. I said, I am not having a hashtag for my wedding. And I've already lost this battle.
It's a partnership now.
So we have two.
Wes
though.
Locked it up is a hashtag.
That's pretty good, too.
So two of them now.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Okay, so. In honor of this momentous occasion, let's talk about some marriages. Real talk about marriage in the NFL. And what is this segment? This segment is we're going to bring up some partnerships in the league. We'll talk about the state of the relationship. What kind of marriage is it? Okay. I think I'll get it going. How about that?
Sure.
We'll start it, and then we'll go around the room. Keish, you have one too?
I have one.
Excellent. Does it involve your favorite football team?
Possibly.
Okay, that's good. That's even better. That's love. Close to your heart.
Say what
that's
you
important.
Know.
Important. Here we go. I'll start in LA too, but with the other team. Okay. This was an arranged marriage. Think about it. An arranged marriage. Here's the groom. It's this team that wanted to be more upwardly mobile, wanted the wealth, wanted the status, and decided to do that. They wanted to get into a partnership, a marriage with a city in Los Angeles, which is the bride here. But guess what? It's an arranged marriage. They didn't fall in love. This wasn't anything that happened naturally. And so what happens? The first year of this marriage is rocky. It doesn't click. It doesn't work. Because as much as the groom wants it to fly, the bride's like, I don't feel it. This isn't working. I don't have that connection that you want us to have. So what does the groom do? The groom, being the Chargers.
Oh, yeah.
The groom says, all right, I may have botched this a little bit. I'm going all in year two. And he gets himself put together. He's the best version of himself. And now he's putting himself out there again to the bride saying, look, I've improved myself. I know I wasn't perfect. Here I am for you. Will you love me?
It's like we've got a starter house. We're going to move to a bigger place in a few years. Just – just this house is comfortable for a few years, and then we'll move into the nice.
I mean, their living arrangement is a source of stress in the relationship, but it's so much bigger than that.
Hey, when the girl's not feeling it, the worst thing you can do is crowd her. You got to give her some space.
Right. I was going to say, you know, some – now, arranged marriage is not, you know, common in this country as much, but it's certainly common in some cultures.
It's not common in this country.
Well, you know.
It is, sure, among some
immigrants in the country. There's still some arranged marriages.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, that relationship, they stay married, but – maybe there's never that great love. So you never know. You don't know this early on is what right. I'm saying.
Well,
it turns into a partnership, but maybe not a true love.
Could be a depressing marriage is what I'm saying, especially when they have their anniversary
but
celebrations.
But it could develop over time.
And they have an 80,000-seat stadium, and there's no one there.
Especially when the bride in this equation has had eyes for decades for a team called the Raiders. So, you know, you're always kind of wondering, what would have happened had I – got formed this union.
The Raiders moved on though.
I'm just saying that's
a real trashy.
But there's
a partner.
Yeah, real trash.
I mean, sexy, but you know, a little.
Hey, dangerous, kind of a bad boy.
You're not taking her home to mom.
It could blow up, or it could, you know, kind of over time. They're kind of still in the dating phase, even though they're married.
That's a few transcendent moments would help.
Yeah,
and that trust builds naturally.
Right. Mm. How about a little Philip Rivers Super Bowl?
How about you have 60,000 kids to fill up the stadium? That might help.
Philip Rivers has all 60,000.
Wait, you're talking about 60,000 Band-Aid babies?
I'm just saying, like, you're gonna have a stadium with thousands of seats. Like, maybe have a family to fill up the
Rivers
seats. A giant family.
Rivers is definitely the man for the job.
He can.
He is. You're right.
He's gonna need a longer lifespan, though.
And in literal terms, yes, the Chargers, they could be one of the best teams in the AFC. So. Does a year of this marriage, this partnership, lead to people starting to get interested in the team here? I'm not convinced. I don't feel buzz in the city about the Chargers. I feel it about the Rams. I don't feel it about the Chargers.
Keisha, do you like that as a Rams fan, that they've clearly kind of taken the early lead here in Los Angeles?
Of course I love that, because at first I was a little worried about the Chargers.
Well, let's stay in L.A. Go ahead. Let's talk about your marriage.
The groom, Sean McVay. Bride, Jared Goff.
Hot groom.
So Goff is getting out of a toxic relationship with Jeff Fisher. There's no connection. They weren't a good fit. He's tired of the 7-9 bullshit. Then McVay comes into his life. They fall in love. They compliment each other. McVay brings out the best. He's whispering sweet nothings in Goff's ear.
Mm,
last season was the honeymoon phase. And now, like, they're ready to have kids. And by kids, I mean trophies.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. It is true. Last year was everything was just lovey-dovey.
Oh, yeah.
And everything worked. But now the real living begins.
That's the true test. They don't have to worry about the 7-year itch for another 6 years.
Is it accelerated, though, in the scale of an NFL partnership?
Like a dog years type version?
Might be 2 or 3 years. But they still could technically be in the honeymoon period, too. But
I think they are.
Expectations are so high this year, though. It's so different than what was going on this time last year.
That's fair.
Yeah, but they're newlyweds. They're in love and they're living happily ever after.
So you have a very optimistic viewpoint.
Oh, yeah.
This is like a match made in heaven.
I was excited for last season, but this season, the new additions, like, I'm just,
You are like the number one Rams fan because you're the only diehard St. Louis Rams fan that moved at the exact same time as the Los Angeles Rams
back
out here.
Home hates me though. So.
Doesn't
so
matter.
It's
you
lonely
got a,
out there.
You got a new husband on the way. You can just start your life over. You don't need anybody.
Yes, kids will be Rams fans.
Your mom still loves you. She's in St. Louis.
I think that's a great compromise. There'll be Rams fans and Cincinnati Reds fans.
Okay, let's not go there.
Or you just won't, have nearly as much control over your
children. He's a big St. Louis Cardinals fan.
Yes.
Who are,
we'll chop
rivals.
The jerseys in half and we'll see.
That's what you think. This is my hashtag.
Mark, what do you got?
I have a couple that I think has kind of lucked out here a little bit. Kirk Cousins and John DeFilippo, the Vikings offensive coordinator, and they kind of remind me.
Johnny D would work his way into this.
Well, listen, here's the thing. I think that he's just coming off a nice Super Bowl win, and he rolls into Minnesota, and this feels kind of like one of those kind of hot, like LA urban young couples that, like, has, they both have, like, really high paying jobs.
Oh, yeah.
They have
Mike's
no.
Gonna- Go ahead.
No responsibilities. You know, maybe they have a dog that someone else takes
care
of. They're
living in a loft downtown.
Yeah, they're just like, it's like, we show up to this party and that party. They're flying. They're just like, their bank account's accruing.
Downtown's awesome right now.
Oh, yeah. There's no real controversy in the marriage so far. And all their friends who have, like, kids and responsibilities, like, what is up with these two? WTF with these two constantly floating from cloud to cloud. And, I mean, they have not had a single – they hadn't weathered a single storm together, and they landed onto a team that if Kirk Cousins does what everyone thinks he'll do, and John DeFilippo, who I think actually, if you go back to when he was the Browns coordinator on a bad Browns team, maximized players. He did a great job with the Eagles quarterbacks. What more could he have done? They could win a Super Bowl very quickly, and this couple's even more annoying to all of us who are, you know, wondering, we're working day jobs. These guys are flying.
That's interesting because you could have the same type of marriage explanation for who we just talked about as well, maybe even more so with McVay because they're proven and everything, Goff. This couple, to me, is also kind of like the couple is like, oh, it all makes so much sense. It's almost like when Wes and LaKeisha got together and you're a little envious, like, oh, they found each other. How
exactly.
I
think it's like happy for you, but kind of like, oh, well, you're kind of hoping that they have to go through some sort of something together.
Right. Eat a little less.
I feel like we did.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, that's where it's not like you guys. You guys went through something.
Just
that's
a bit.
It's not like you guys.
I like that one.
I feel like if Mark was going to write some erotica about any of these couples, it's this one. You know what I'm saying?
Greg, that's an interesting comment.
They showed up at the downtown loft as the sun went down.
This couple sounds great.
And who would have guessed that Kirk Cousins would, you know, crowd in on Mark's territory? I always figured it'd be him and DeFilippo. You know what I mean?
You are
like
Johnny
DeFilippo.
D guy.
I think
you
he's,
ride or die with Johnny D.
No, I think he's going to prove any doubters out there wrong. I think he's going to be a good offensive coordinator.
I think you're in on the ground floor with Johnny D on a lot of levels. I don't think there's a lot of doubters. It's just like you love this offensive coordinator who built his career, and now he's getting a big shot. I'm excited for you.
I dig him. I'm excited for him. I'd be happy for Vikings
fans.
Maybe
you show up at the loft. Little three.
I'm not going to get in the way. I'm not going to get in the way. I'm not going to get in the way.
Right where I was going.
All right, Wes, you're up.
Let's go with a newlywed couple. You know, last year Mitch Trubisky was the bride, swept off his feet by a experienced older gentleman in John Fox, who has been through a lot more in life.
And May-December romance.
May have been worn down by a little of it. And, you know, this elderly, not elderly, but, you know, gentlemanly type really put Trubisky in some bad spots. You know, Evan Silva this week said he's been studying the Bears last year for Sharp Magazine and was amazed at how poorly they were managed, how many bad decisions they made, how difficult they made life for Mitch Trubisky, a lot of run-run-pass series. And now you're getting a fresh young guy coming in, willing to try new things like RPOs. What's Trubisky going to do with some RPOs?
What does that stand for?
Yeah, put him in that position. You know, that's put him in the RPO position. So there's a lot to like about where this marriage is going. Keeping it fresh.
I like it.
Keeping it fresh.
I like it. We're skewing positive on a good day, on a good week.
Yeah.
Well, I have it, but you guys are.
Well,
I love it. They're all great marriages.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
That topic is on the table. Go ahead.
I got hung up by the RPO thing.
I know you really
what
did.
What else it could stand for besides really run pass option? And
oh, you're going through options.
I got lost
in
the weeds. Yeah,
it's just always good to keep the marriage fresh.
Absolutely.
Remember that
they don't know what they don't know. You know, kind of like these young couple. They don't know what they don't know though. Right now, they are in the newlywed phase and
young, dumb, and full.
Yeah, they're just gonna the regular season's gonna arrive and then they're gonna be tested.
Absolutely.
We'll see.
Filled with love. All right, Greg, you're up.
All right, you said we were skewing positive. Mine is a relationship a little farther along, and and it's Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, and right now they're kind of a marriage that's staying together for the kids. You know, the best years probably in the rear view. They've had a lot of great times together. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned having some kids in terms of the trophy. I mean, they've got NFC North division titles just all over the place. They've got a Super Bowl title. They've got a couple of MVPs that they work together. I mean, they've done a lot together, and that's why it's hard to break. It's hard to make that choice to break up when you've had all that success because there's a hope. Maybe you could have a little renaissance. But really, they're thinking about the kids. All those Packers shareholders out there that are just that just want this era to get a little more. It's been great, but it could be even better. And so they're just staying together, hoping upon hope, even though the sparks haven't really been there lately, that it'll turn around.
I got to ask you, Greg, who wears the pants in this relationship?
I think Aaron Rodgers wears the pants because, you know, in some relationships, he's still looking like he just got married. I mean, he's looking good. Yeah. He's looking great on the field. He's still at his highest level. And there's been more questions like, what's McCarthy really bringing to the relationship right now?
Ouch.
So, you know, I think he's definitely wearing the pants.
I had another one that kind of piggybacks off that a little bit because it's the Cowboys and Jason Garrett. And it's a similar situation where it's maybe high school sweethearts. They get together.
One way to look at it.
Things start out well, but as time goes on, things stagnate. All of a sudden, date nights on the town become nights on the couch. One side – you know, lets the gym membership lapse. The other stops going on her jogs in the morning. All of a sudden, it's about the kids. And it's about making money in the job. And you just lose whatever it
They're
was.
They're in that grind.
It's that grind. It's that life grind. And I feel like the Cowboys and Jason Garrett are in that place where you have to start asking some hard questions whether you should still be together or if it's just a marriage of convenience at this point.
Convenience.
Does the marriage stand a chance when it started out as a kept woman?
Never works out.
Explain.
That scenario.
Explain.
Jason Garrett has been kept by Jerry Jones for a long time, even before he was the head
coach.
Like
a concubine, almost.
Mm. He took his wife under his wing in this situation at a very young age.
Mm.
And taught her about life.
Very young.
And you could say, it's been...
Jason Garrett was a young ingenue.
And been very influential. I mean, you remember Jason Garrett, he had a chance to leave. He had a chance before he ever officially got married in Dallas. He had the job in Baltimore just waiting for him. He would have had the job that went to John Harbaugh. And just over the years, he thought he had just built this relationship almost like he's brainwashed or something like that he's got to stay.
Jerry Jones has a lot invested.
Very interesting. we're low on time. Does anyone have a quick one they want to throw out? Or
I'll do a real quick one.
Go for it.
Which is just – Ron Rivera and David Tepper. It's like stepdad just showed up, you know? And you better be on your best behavior. It's a whole different house. You don't know what the rules are going to be.
This is more a family dynamic rather than a marriage.
It's a little different. Stepdad just showed up.
So Ron Rivera is married to Charlotte or the Panthers?
Yeah, the Panthers.
David Tepper is the stepdad coming in and overseeing.
He's coming in.
And what?
He's big daddy.
At what point does Ron Rivera go, "You're not my real dad"? Is that week 6, week 7?
I mean, it's
week 10.
If it hasn't already happened,
he's just hoping he's nice, wants to impress.
I mean, if it already happened, I don't know if Ron's gonna make it to week 1 if he drops him with a "You're not my real dad" bomb.
Fair, solid analysis.
All right, good marriage talk. Marriage, it's a crapshoot.
Ouch.
That's the takeaway. But we're very confident the one that's in the middle of this room right now is going to work. So,
wow, marriage on Tybee.
I know. It's Woo! About to be lit. That,
for the record, that is her decision.
Whoa.
I'm not looking forward to running into this Jim Glassfeld. I'll tell you that.
And coming up next week, at some point, we'll lay out all the odds on Best Man for Wes. And maybe we might even have some odds for the Maid of Honor. Well, patron of honor. Who knows?
There's already some underlying tension from the fact that I want the wedding to be as least formal as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a woman in America, so that's going to run up against
opposition. But I'm not as formal as a lot of people are. Like,
she's.
I want to have pizza and salad. Like, that's what we're having for dinner.
Yeah, she's willing to. She wants to have it in Tybee Island. It can't be too. It can't be.
I just don't believe in rules. Like, do what you want as a couple, not what people have been doing for thousands of years.
Wow. This will be some wedding.
That's my fiance.
I don't think that, like, other people who are doing it is ever going to be a good reason to do anything.
Another, there you go. Another program note next week is mandatory mini camps for all or most?
20.
All but four teams.
All but four. Are the Lions in or out?
Greg?
No, they're back. They're back in OTAs.
Look at that. They are serious this season. So we will do three shows next week. A little early June banger of a and yes, we lost Mark again. He's off the hook again. He's going to be not with us next week.
I won't be with you. I don't regret that.
You saw the schedule that we that was the week where we had three shows. And
does anybody think that's a coincidence? By the way,
no, no one.
Look, I planned this months ago, but I am not unhappy with how it came. You know, how it matched up with this with next week's.
Well,
schedule,
we'll miss you, Mark. Your second staycation, and hopefully this one goes a little bit better.
Oh, it's
going to
be absolutely great.
All right. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm. Enjoy yourself, Mark. The mailman, Mrs. Mailman-to-be, the paramour, the old boss, and Lindsay Fulton behind the glass. Oh, yeah. Till Monday.